Today, China unveiled measures to improve Beijing's air quality during the summer's Olympic Games. One of the measures is a ban on half of all the cars on the streets of the capital every day. That ban starts later this month. Such steps may yield short-term benefits, but they fall well short of the actions that China is going to have to take to protect its environment in the long term. Those environmental challenges are growing as fast as China's cities are, and that's mighty fast. The World's Mary Kay Magstead has the final story in our series on China's urban explosion.
Guo Hui is living the Chinese dream. She sits in the lush back garden of her spacious townhouse in a far suburb of Beijing. She recounts how she, her husband, her daughter, and her parents went from living in one cramped room in the heart of Beijing to this. It started with scraping together enough money to buy a $9,000 subsidized apartment from her government employer.
We were really, really happy because it's a big change in our life. That's the first thing we own. Yeah, we spend a lot of time to design it. At that time, IKEA is our best choice.
Eventually, that apartment started feeling too small, but its value had jumped tenfold. So the family could stretch and buy this place. And in just 4 years, it's tripled in value to $600,000. That's nice, Guo Hui says, but the money is only part of its value to her family.
We don't like to live in the city anymore. It's so crowded, there's so many cars, and the pollution.
Guo prefers the leafy suburban life, with shops nearby and a pool and clubhouse just down the street. For trips out of this area, her family has one car and is buying another. A subway line will reach here before too long. Guo and her family have ridden the rainbow of China's double-digit economic growth, and Dutch architect Neville Mars thinks all this echoes the American experience of the 1950s. He calls his new book The Chinese Dream. But he says the world is different now, struggling with global warming and growing competition for finite resources.
The original goals that China put forth with individual prosperity are now under scrutiny, with people building suburbs and motorizing themselves in a way that in the global context is maybe no longer really required or even wanted.
Because it's not necessarily sustainable.
I know the debate in America is ongoing, but from a Western or a European standpoint, it's obviously not sustainable.
Beijing, for instance, now has 3.5 million cars. Many of its roads are gridlocked, and its air is choked with pollution. It is expanding its subway, but many Beijingers and other Chinese see owning a car as a sign that they've made it, a status symbol they will not be denied. So, as China's urban areas grow, the focus tends to be on building highways and overpasses and big boulevards, cities for cars, not for pedestrians. Neville Mars says it doesn't have to be that way, nor in this era of energy crisis should it be.
The way the urban landscape is forming will actually define our future energy needs. So for China, that means if it can find more efficient urban forms, it will actually safeguard its needs for the future.
Building cities that are more dense and walkable would help address one challenge. But the needs of China's megacities are many, and Beijing in particular has an even more urgent challenge on its hands. It's water, or a growing shortage of it. Beijing sits on a semi-arid northern plain. Many rivers and lakes and reservoirs in the region have either dried up or become excessively polluted through decades of overuse. Now, two-thirds of Beijing's water comes from below ground, including from aquifers as deep as 3,000 feet. The water table is dropping by about 3 feet a year.
In my mind, I'm lucky because I cannot, you know, I have only 10 years or 15 years to live.
Dai Qing is a 67-year-old environmental activist and Beijing native who has written extensively on water issues.
And then only you, the next generation, you will see Beijing will totally disappear. Totally disappear. We don't have the ancient capital Beijing. We don't have the, you know, right now the ugly modern Beijing. We don't have it.
That may be an extreme prediction, but Dai Qing's point is that radical changes need to be made and fast. She says the price of water is way too low. It doesn't reflect water scarcity in northern China, nor the long-term costs of drilling so deep to get it. She finds it obscene that water gets diverted from rural rivers and reservoirs that farmers use for their crops to water golf courses, to fill Beijing's man-made lakes, and for the Olympics, to fill a riverbed that's been dry for 9 years so they can hold rowing and canoeing events there. One of the farmers affected by all this is 57-year-old Jing Guo. He lives in a village in Hebei province, near one of the four reservoirs that is diverting water to Beijing for the Olympics. Jing says farmers in his village were told they'd have to look elsewhere for water, so they sunk their own well. He says at least now they don't have to pay for water. But free access to water from deep wells hardly sends the right signal about water's scarcity and the need to conserve it, nor does the cheap water that city dwellers have on tap. The problem is only growing, as China's urban population does. Within a couple of decades, the percentage of Chinese living in cities will jump from less than half to about two-thirds, an increase of hundreds of millions of people. But Ma Jun, the director of the Institute for Public and Environmental Affairs in Beijing, says dense urbanization, as opposed to suburban sprawl, isn't necessarily bad for the environment.
You know, in China, you can't just have this 1.3 billion people spread all over and then try to make sure that they could get more affluent in their small local towns or villages. I think it will be quite challenging. And also environmentally, the impact could be equally serious. So urbanization by itself is not a problem to me, but sustainable urbanization.
One city that's out ahead in trying to promote sustainable urbanization is Shanghai. Here at the Shanghai Urban Planning Museum, there's a big sign that says, "Environmentally Friendly City, Eco Shanghai." The display shows the city's efforts to increase green space, reduce emissions, increase energy efficiency, and clean up water. The city also plans to invest $1.5 billion to put solar panels on 100,000 rooftops by 2015, and there are plans to build an experimental eco town on the outskirts of Shanghai, which will use only renewable energy. This is part of a nationwide effort to boost renewable energy use. China is already the world's top user of solar water heaters, 40 million and counting. Zheng Lijun is the vice minister of China's State Environmental Protection Administration. He says the country's goals for energy efficiency and pollution reduction are clear, but at a recent news conference, he listed the challenges in meeting those goals.
Polluting and energy-intensive companies have been growing too fast. There's been blind exploitation in some areas, and too high a price paid for fast economic growth. Some local governments don't take environmental protection seriously enough.
So Ma Jun of the Institute for Public and Environmental Affairs thought he'd help out.
We believe that to overcome this tremendous challenge, we need to involve the affected communities and the concerned public in the environmental governance. And the first step toward that is to give access to information. So therefore, we set up this database to provide people with data on water quality, the amount of discharge, and a list of polluters in all the 31 provinces and about 300 cities.
The map's online, so if a factory near you is polluting, you can look it up, find out who it's supplying, and put pressure on everyone involved. The map's data comes from government sources. These are companies the government has already listed as polluters. But in many cases, the fines are so low, companies find it easier to pay the fine than fix the problem. Ma Jun says public scrutiny and pressure through his website have forced some companies to clean up their act. This is a rally for something called the Green Long March. This summer, thousands of Chinese college students are traveling all over China to do public awareness education. 22-year-old Zheng Xingcheng says he got involved in environmental activism because when he moved from his small town to the city of Urumqi in Xinjiang province, he was appalled by the pollution. He says, when I first came to Urumqi, it was hard for me to breathe. painful even, and the water tasted funny too. He figured if he was going to live in a city, he might as well do what he could to make it more livable. That impulse, multiplied by millions, may be just what it takes to keep China's leaders honest and help them steer a more sustainable path on China's journey to an urbanized future. For The World, I'm Mary Kay Magstad in Beijing.
You can find pictures and transcripts of our series about China's urban explosion at theworld.org.